I'd like to welcome everyone this morning. Whoa, let's back that off. There we go. Hopefully that's better. Can you hear me in the back okay? Okay, thank you. As Virgil mentioned, there are a lot of people traveling. That includes our preacher and his wife. And so I'll be, as a stand-in, bringing you a lesson from God's Word. The lesson today, I will admit, is a little odd. With respect to our culture, it's a little bit odd with respect to kind of current circumstances, but nonetheless, I'd like to spend a few moments talking today about the dangers of prosperity. As I said, in our modern culture, that sounds odd, admittedly, but as we get into the lesson, we'll kind of understand more why that's the case. So, from an introduction, if you want to turn over to Proverbs chapter 30, verses 8 and 9, there's this interesting proverb that sounds, again, from our perspective, unusual. It says, "Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with food allotted to me, lest I be full and deny you and say, 'Who is the Lord?' Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God." You know, it's certainly easier to see problems with poverty. For instance, Proverbs 6, 30 and 31 talks about people who do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy himself when he is starving. And certainly we understand, especially in our current situation within this country, around the world as well, a lot of the economic upheaval. I mean, people's hours being cut back, people being temporarily furloughed, people being laid off, people losing their jobs, not knowing where their rent's coming from, etc. And that obviously can be very, stressful, and certainly our hearts go out to people who are in those kind of circumstances. And so we can easily see, Proverbs 30, the desire to, don't give me poverty. Poverty's not good. I think there's a phrase that says, "I've been poor and I've been rich, and rich is better," for instance, just kind of a colloquial term that we have. But it also talks about, "Give me neither riches." It's kind of harder to see the problem with riches, especially within our culture. We are, America, the land of opportunity. Countless thousands of people from foreign countries try to come here for that opportunity, with inventors, entrepreneurs, small business owners, CEOs, etc., within our system, are striving for things that in general very often lead to prosperity, upward mobility, and a number of different things, and various creature comforts as well. And we kind of understand that. It's like, this is great. This is what we should, strive for, right? But as we saw in the previous verse, Proverbs 30, that there's a hidden trap in prosperity. Now, I'm going to keep trying to talk about prosperity and not necessarily focus on what is often talked about, love of money. Because there's a difference to a degree between the two. So, today what we want to try to do is spend some time within God's Word looking at the dangers of prosperity. Old Testament examples, New Testament examples, modern examles, where we in many ways see this actually continuing to occur in our modern society. Look at the temptations associated with prosperity and the need for spiritual perspective to kind of wrap things up. So let's kind of talk about Old Testament examples for starters. At the very beginning, Genesis 2 and Genesis 3 with Eve. Now, as you may recall, Genesis 2, God created, planted a garden. Every tree was there that is pleasant to the sight and good for food. Likewise, go back a little bit, Genesis 1, 27 through 30, where he gave mankind dominion over every living thing, every green herb for food, seem to imply no predators to worry about. Likewise, Genesis 1:31, stepping back, looking at everything, it was all very good. And another interesting clue, Genesis 2:25, talking about Adam and Eve, you know, not being clothed, being naked, seems to suggest a certain mild climate. So if you wrap all of that together, the environment seemed to be very richly blessed, an idyllic existence. No struggle for food, no sweat of the brow, thorns, thistles, weeds. Didn't have to worry about mortgage payments, rent payments, bills, taxes to pay, concern over predators, you know, etc. Very richly blessed. We could use the term, they were very prosperous in that sense. Very idyllic existence. Hard for us to imagine that. I mean, sometimes we might get glimpses in, you know, from artist concepts or in various beautiful gardens that we might go to. But in an existence where don't need money, don't need to struggle for your food, etc. Don't need to pay the bills, etc. A very nice existence. And yet, it wasn't enough. As we see in Genesis chapter 3, the serpent deceived Eve. 2 Corinthians 11:3. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, despite all the other trees that were around, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, despite all the other trees around that were pleasant to the eyes, and a tree desirable to make one wise, that's different. She took of its fruit and ate. And we see that she was in many ways the first, but certainly not the last person to fall into that trap. And obviously a warning for us as well. 2 John 2:16, for all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. So in this case, prosperity, a sense of wealth, if you'll grant me that, kind of led to, in some ways, forgetting about God, forgetting about what God had said. I mean, she knew what he said, but she's got a better deal over here. And in turn, she served herself. Looked good, pleasant to the eyes, good for food, etc. And we will see this kind of a pattern and variants of it as we kind of go through our lesson. First, but not the last. Let's come over to Genesis chapter 13. And we have the story of Lot with an artist's conception behind me. So he and Abram, very rich, very prosperous, lots of riches in terms of lots of flocks, herds, tents, etc. You know, so much so that it was causing conflict between him and Abram. And so they had this discussion, and they decide to kind of split apart the herds, so to speak, so they have enough, you know, grassland, etc., and they wouldn't squabble amongst themselves. And as you may recall the story, Genesis 13, Lot chose what at the time looked to be a real sweet deal. You know, down in the well-watered valley of the Jordan River, very lush, which if you have, you know, flocks and herds, it's great to feed them. Genesis 13:10 talks about that area being like the garden. Garden of Eden. Back in Genesis 2 and Genesis 3. And so Lot says, I'll go take that. I'm already prosperous, but not quite enough. I'm going to take all my possessions over there. And unfortunately, that well-watered plain of the Jordan, lush vegetation, of course in a relatively parched land, wonderful place to be, is the site of Sodom. Genesis 13:12. And as the story goes on, we'll see that eventually Lot basically lost it all. Lost his prosperity, herds, tents, lost his wife, some ways potentially, in a sense, lost his daughters as well. Lot, Genesis 13. Speaking of Sodom, Genesis 18. So according to Genesis 13:13 and Genesis 18:20, this group of cities in this well-watered plain were, quote-unquote, exceedingly wicked and sinful, very grievous, their activities, heavy, grave, depending on the translation. As we see in Genesis 19:4-5, we see, you know, one of the dominant sins, if you will, homosexuality as well as gang rape. Jude 7, having given themselves over to sensual immorality, depending on translation, or fornication, gone after strange flesh. And, of course, Sodom and Gomorrah are infamous for this behavior, right? But there's more to the story. If you note over in Ezekiel chapter 16, verses 48-50, there's more to the story. In that context, it says Sodom, and by comparison, the other cities there as well, had, now watch it, pride, fullness of food, abundance of idleness. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy. They were haughty, another word for proud, and committed abomination. So there's more to the story than just the homosexuality. If you think in terms of lush vegetation, trade, popular cities, etc., at least within the region, very well watered, in a relatively dry land, lots of trade, probably a very wealthy city or wealthy area, right? Which most likely led to prosperity, which most likely led to, as we see, other things, Ezekiel 16, including pride, forgetting about God, turning around and serving themselves. And of course, a major component of serving themselves is serving their own sexual pleasures. So we see in this particular case, homosexuality, if you will, is the symptom. It's the end. It's not the root. It's not the first cause. First cause, if you want to trace it back, seemed to be prosperity. Interesting thought there. Let's move forward. So the Israelites are wandering the wilderness. At this point, Deuteronomy 8, they are camped, getting ready to go into the land. And there's lots of warnings. Deuteronomy 8, beginning with verse 6. Warnings to keep commandments, walk in the ways of the Lord. Verse 7 talks about the upcoming prosperity when they go into the land. And, you know, things like, you know, when you start dwelling in verse 12, you know, houses that you didn't have to build, vineyards you didn't have to plant, and all these other things based on the inhabitants being thrown out. You should bless the Lord. And beware that you not forget the Lord, your God. Verse 11. Verse 12, verse 13, again, describes the food, real estate, riches. Look at verse 14. When your heart is lifted up and you forget the Lord your God, goes on to say, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. Hey, look at me. I did all this. And they start to forget that it is He, capital H, He, who gives you power to get wealth. That verse 19 says, forget the Lord your God, and then what? Follow other gods. That's the warning. Well, what happened? Sure enough, Judges chapter 2, verses 10 through 12, Judges chapter 3 and verse 7. Of course, this is after Joshua died. When all that generation that had been gathered to their fathers, another generation arose after them who did not know the Lord, nor the work which He had done for Israel. Of course, this is after they've conquered the land, occupied the cities, etc. And Joshua and that generation grew old, died. New generation goes, hey, this is cool. Got all this prosperity. Houses, farms, lands, pasturage, whatever. Judges 17:6 has a very sad comment. of the people at the time. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And again, think back in terms of the warnings about prosperity. Ezekiel 16, 10 through 20 talks about a number of different things, including serving other gods, even to the point of murdering their children in human sacrifice to their gods. That's how bad it got, as a symptom. But you roll it back, root cause, in some ways, among other causes, came into the land, got all this wonderful stuff, lifted up sense of pride, started forgetting about God, and started serving themselves and serving other gods, even to the point of murdering their own children. Sad situation. Nebuchadnezzar, chapter 4 of Daniel. So Nebuchadnezzar's interesting story. So he is at rest in his house. He is flourishing. Of course, remember Nebuchadnezzar, king of the dominant world, at least regional, power. Right? Would be like president of the United States, or, you know, Southeast Asia, or Far East, you know, president of China, you know, very mega empire. And he's at the top of the pyramid, and life is sweet. Regional, quote-unquote, superpower, ruler, verse 22. Yep, but, verse 30, I like this quote. The king spoke, saying, "Is not this great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling by my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty?" Ain't I great? And as you may remember, the story goes on in some artist concepts about, you know, splendor and wealth and the hanging gardens of Babylon, etc. Somebody got his attention. He got some quote-unquote perspective. Verse 37. Well, between up to verse 37, you may recall, it's almost like he went crazy, dwelt out in the field, just like an animal. Got some humility along with it. Verse 37, near the end of the chapter. "Now I, Nebuchadnezzar," look at the change of tone, "praise and extol and honor the King of Heaven, all of whose works are truth, and his way is justice, and those who walk in," watch it, "pride, me," Nebuchadnezzar, "he is able to put down." Right? Got some perspective. And again, all that wealth led to pride, which led to forgetting God. Again, somewhere pattern. Let's move over to the New Testament. Rich farmer, Luke 12, beginning roughly verse 15 through about verse 21. Of course, Jesus kind of tees up the story, saying, "Beware of covetousness, greed." Now here we're talking greed, not necessarily just prosperity. "For one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." And of course, he goes on, beginning at verse 16, to talk about the ground of a certain rich man. Continue on down. He's talking to himself. "Hey, life is great. You have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. Woohoo! We've got it made. We are prosperous. We have a rock." But God said, "Fool, this night your soul is required of you. So who is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God?" Again, wealth, thinking less about God, thinking more about yourself. Similar pattern. How about the rich young ruler, Matthew 19, roughly verse 16 through 24. And near the end, as you may recall, you know, Jesus talked about, you know, giving up his possessions in that particular case. Luke 18, 24, when Jesus saw that he, the rich young ruler, became very sorrowful, he said, How hard it is for those who have riches to enter the kingdom of God. Not inherently bad, it's just hard. In this case, you may notice, as sometimes people will make the case, prosperous, young, and powerful. And with that combination, had something he was missing. Luke 16:13 talks about you cannot serve God and mammon, some translations have, or riches. And in this case, he had the wealth, but if you remember the case, he still remembered God. He was still looking for God, still looking to be righteous. Came to Jesus. Hey, what more can I do to be, you know, be pleasing? But in this case, he loved the riches more. And hence, the choice between God and riches. Now, before you get a sense that I'm saying prosperity is bad, evil, sinful, let's give a little bit of balance. Because in the Bible, there are examples of people who were prosperous, in some cases exceedingly wealthy by their standards, and still were righteous. Okay. For instance, Job, chapter 1, verse 3. Abram, 13:2. Solomon, 1 Kings 10. Of course, he got in trouble later on with all of his wives and concubines, but that's a different story. Joseph of Arimathea, Matthew 27:57. Zacchaeus, who's famous for being a wee little man and crying under the tree, but he was exceedingly wealthy as a tax collector. Luke 19:2. Barnabas, Acts 4:37, had a tract of land, sold it. Of course, that story was immediately followed by Ananias and Sapphira, where they sold their land and gave part. So they wanted the glory, but didn't necessarily want to part with the money. And so in some ways, they were prosperous too, but that's a bad example. Barnabas, good example. Okay, Old Testament, New Testament. What did Solomon say? Nothing new under the sun? Let's talk about some modern examples. And in some ways, I will admit, this might be a little overgeneralizing things. But certainly sounds consistent. So, as you may recall, back in the 20s and 30s, particularly in the 30s, in this country, there was a lot of poverty. You know, with the Great Depression, economic collapse, having to do without, having to make do. And in many ways, some people, historians, ascribe that kind of a experience, hardened people in a good sense, toughen them up, so to speak, that generation went on to become, quote-unquote, the greatest generation, and those that fought and successfully won World War II. So right after the war, a relative boom economically. I mean, we were the only, quote-unquote, power on the planet that was relatively unscathed from World War II. Still had our manufacturing base, etc. Factories, industry, and this pent-up demand for goods and services while people had been rationing during the war. So with returning GIs and all that, boom, you know, late 40s, into the 50s. And then we get to the 60s. Perhaps in some part coming from the prosperity, another generation grew up that didn't know about the Depression and doing without, didn't really know about the war per se. And life is good, right? Relatively speaking, cars, houses, suburbs. And yet at the very same time, we see a rise of forgetting about God and a rise of serving self. Sound familiar? We see a number of different things in the 60s. You know, sexual revolution, campus riots against the war and the government, liberalization of divorce laws, prohibition against school-sponsored prayer, prohibition against, you know, school-sponsored Bible readings, all declared unconstitutional. Ouch. Is there a pattern there from prosperity to being more self-centered when life is good? Maybe. Move forward into the 70s and more emphasis on self. Now with the legalization of abortion, the women's freedom or liberation movement, the gay liberation movement, etc. Moving forward into the 90s where certain speech and certain activities start carrying a special label called hate crimes. And generally that's more of a distinction. I mean, there are other applications, but more distinction against homosexuality, speaking against homosexuality. Move forward into the 2000s, where homosexual conduct decriminalized, finally, by the Supreme Court. A movement now for marriage equality with homosexuality. Move forward into the 2010s, increasingly more so. Now we talk about transgender, transsexual, males entering women's sports, using them as restrooms. The gender fluid movement, that it doesn't matter what your biology is, it's what you want to be treated like, etc. Again, some degree of self. Continuing on, 2020s, here we are. And things seem kind of like not so good. You know, riots, arson, looting, injuring, killing, including police officers, including black police officers. Not much outrage for that, though. How about illegally occupying city property? Used to be called CHAZ, now it's called CHOP. Interesting, the mayor of Seattle, on one of the news outlets when that was starting off, I think the anchor was asking her about this. Was she worried? Was she concerned? Was she going to do something about it? And somewhat, I don't know, flippantly, she said, "Oh, this may be just like the summer of love." Now, if you're familiar with that term, that takes you immediately back to the 60s. And hippie movement and campus, all that sort of bad stuff. I think she may be changing her mind due to more recent events. Bottom line is, there's nothing new under the sun, is there? And as always, there's a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. Proverbs 14:12. And it sure sounds like, at least in some cases, we're back to Judges 21:25. Everyone doing what is right in their own eyes. Can we make a case? You know, wealth in the 40s and the 50s? Starting to forget about God in the 60s and 70s? Starting to serve self and sexual pleasure in the 70s, 80s, and more so to the present? I think you can make that case. So, let's talk about temptations. So, when we talk about prosperity, I mean, you know, you can lump a bunch of stuff under that canopy. You know, money kinds of things, stocks, bonds, 401ks, the equity in your home, insurance, whatever. A number of different ways that you can, you know, measure prosperity. The kinds of temptations around that. Again, not inherently sinful, just dangerous in some ways, right? And I don't quite like this graphic, which suggests a linear progression, but that's not really the case always. If you have a good amount of prosperity, you can start to trust in those riches. At least according to Psalms 49, verse 6, those who trust in their wealth and boast in the multitude of their riches, look at me, look at what I got. I'm CEO, I'm president of my company. Started with nothing. You know, rags to riches, that's the great American dream, right? Unfortunately, if you're boasting in yourself, where does that leave room for God? Psalms 52, verse 7. Talk about those who did not make God his strength, but trusted in the abundance of his riches, strengthened himself in his wickedness. Psalms 52, 7. And of course, you know, with a sense of pride or forgetting God, you know, it's very easy to start falling into the trap of greed. You want to hang on to what you got, right? Or, hey, I'm wealthy, I'm prosperous, I'm going to spend it on what I want. And in a sense, that's kind of okay. But you can see how that can get out of hand, where you're spending it on, you know, quote-unquote selfishness. James chapter 4, verse 3 and 5, verse 3, talk about those who are praying for things, asking amiss that they may spend it on their pleasures. You have heaped up treasure. And then, of course, with all that going on, you can kind of see where you start with this kind of interaction, forgetting about God as the source of all power to get wealth. and start being this kind of thing here, you can start to see how people could easily fall into serving gods, other gods. Well, that is a couple different ways. And of course, Deuteronomy 29:26, in warning to what the Israelites were going to do once they got into the promised land, which they did, as we saw over in Judges, went and served other gods. Now, generally speaking, our culture is not polytheistic. We're not like India, where we have a multitude of gods, right? Like the New Testament time, Roman gods, Greek gods, pantheon kind of thing, right? But make no mistake, I think we got our own gods, right? We just don't necessarily fall down and worship a graven image kind of thing. You know, gods are things we put first and foremost and go serve. Leisure, fame, power, wealth, sexual lusts, you name it. Lots of potential temptations there. So, what's the answer? Since there's nothing new under the sun, how about the need for perspective? And we'll fit kind of several things underneath here as we start to kind of wind things up. So, as I said before, prosperity is not inherently sinful, but it is dangerous. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 9 and 10. Note that those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and snare. Many foolish and harmful lusts. Verse 10. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, according to this translation. For which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. So it's not necessarily the money and the prosperity, it's kind of the attitudes around it. Desire, love, etc. Putting those things first. Here's another potential way of looking at perspective. It's all temporary. It's all temporary. The house, the car, the 401k, etc. It's all temporary. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 15. Came into this world with nothing. You're exiting nothing. Shall take nothing from his labor. Hopefully that gives us a sense of perspective. Or as James chapter 1, verses 9 through 11 talks about, you know, no sooner has the sun risen with a burning heat that it withers the grass. You've seen this with plants. Flower falls, its beautiful appearance perishes. So the rich man also will fade away in his pursuits. It's all temporary. Okay? It's a little bit more perspective. Let's talk about relative importance. Luke chapter 12, verses 15 through 21 says, in part, Jesus speaking, he said to them, take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses. Now, sometimes you may hear the phrase, he who dies with the most toys wins. Of course, that's balanced by he who dies with the most toys still dies. Okay. And again, Luke 16, 13, you cannot serve God and mammon. I probably should have put it here. One more verse. Thought about it this morning, but didn't have time to add it in. Talking about perspective. Philippians chapter 4, which we refer to a lot, and legitimately so. Paul speaking, starting at verse 11. We'll read 11 through 13. Not that I speak in respect of want. For I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased or poor, and I know how to abound, prosperous. Everywhere and in all things I am instructed, both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. So Paul had good perspective. I mean, he'd been there, done that. Both ends of the spectrum, learned to be content. key verse, pivotal verse, last verse I'll leave with you, verse 13. And think of this verse in the current economic state. You know, I don't know if it's a record high unemployment, people being laid off, not knowing where the next paycheck's coming from, as well as the prosperity that preceded it, as well as hopefully the prosperity that we'll be able to get back to, etc. Regardless of the circumstances, verse 13, I'll leave with you. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So in some ways, when it comes down to serving, are you serving prosperity, or is it just there and you're having it as nice? It's nice. But hopefully it's not your God that you're serving. And again, choice. Having prosperity as your God, or having God as your God. Having the right attitude, having the right perspective. And again, like I said, as we began, you know, our hearts certainly go out to those who are, you know, suffering in terms of the current economy, people being laid off, not knowing where the next payment is coming from, reduced hours, etc. And that's trying. And it's hard. And as I said, our hearts go out to you know, people in that situation. But the answer isn't necessarily having a full bank account, fancy car, nice house, 401k, pensions, etc. That's not necessarily the answer either, because that also has some dangers. So the lesson is yours. As we conclude this morning, I want to offer the Lord's invitation to those who may need to respond, either to become a Christian and start down the path of serving God, the true God, over our own selves, our own desires, or if as a Christian, if we've encountered problems with, it might be wealth, it might be other things that cause us to kind of lose our way, so to speak, that we need to acknowledge publicly, if it was public, and then come forward and repent, or if you're just struggling. And there's a lot of things to struggle about in our current economy, specifically, but in general as well. Also more so from, you know, spiritual perspective, if that is the case. Whatever your circumstances, if you have a need, just come forward and we'll try to take care of it as we now stand and sing.